It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
He shot through my door. Greg in my classroom got hurt. I just saw blood everywhere.
I actually heard the gunshots. I heard at least four, like boom, 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 boom.
People were running and screaming and pushing.
I hid in the tennis courts. Then we went to the locker room. We were in there for about 2.5 to 3 hours.
There was dead bodies everywhere.
And it's Valentine's Day, so this shouldn't even be happening.
We thought it was a fire drill, but we heard the shots beforehand. And I'm guessing he wanted everybody to come out.
One of my friends died, and it hasn't hit me yet.
In the hallway, I saw a big pile of blood, like, kind of smeared, as if they were dragged away.
I was praying to God, thinking that he could save us all and that we could make it out alive.
Sandy Rios with you this morning on this very sad day. It's hard to watch that or listen to it without weeping, because we think of the innocence of our kids and how little they know, how short a time they've lived on this life. And for them to be in the middle of such carnage is just unspeakable. I've been watching lots of videos and footage. The kids, you know, had cameras, their phones, you know, inside the school. So you can see quite a bit. Well, not quite a bit. You can see enough, I'll tell you that. There was one that was particularly graphic. You could see kids. It was a time of rescue. I think the shooting maybe was over, but you could see kids dead in various parts of the classroom, and then others were being shepherded out of the room. And actually, I want to clip ahead to this soundtrack from that. That's what's happening. You just picture a classroom. One child is videotaping what's from the phone, what's happening, and another student is in front of him or her. It's a girl, and you can see what they see. Students dead on the floor and others being ushered out. Let's just listen. Clip 5. I don't play that for any purpose of being morbid. It's just that I sometimes think, because we've had so many shootings and we have watched so much carnage, whether it's the Las Vegas shootings or the Orlando nightclub or the San Bernardino slayings, we just can get callous, and I don't want to. I don't want to. I want my heart to break with these stories afresh each and every time. I do not want to get crusted over, and I'm inviting you not to do that either. So this is what's happening. She's being escorted out of the room. You hear the real grief in her voice. This is human life. Being taken wantonly. Of course, remember that God in Genesis, way early on, was either Genesis 3 or Genesis 5, gave a prohibition against taking human life. That was I don't know how many years, hundreds, well, I have to ask Ken Ham, before the Ten Commandments were ever given. And that was the cardinal thing that God laid down. Don't you dare, don't you take human life. But that's what man does. And the earth was destroyed because of the violence men were doing to one another. That's what the scripture says. So let's go back, though, because the details of this, as far as we can understand at this point, 17 people dead. There are dozens others that are wounded. I don't know what their conditions are. I'm sure we will hear much more detail today, and I don't know how critical, but 17 so far dead. The student was Nicholas Cruz, age 19. It was the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. By the way, I read in another place that Parkland was declared last year the safest city in Florida. One of the things that you notice when the kids come out, at least I noticed, is that they're very poised. They seem to be, I know this is a generalization, but the kids that I saw interviewed and of the videos I saw of them coming out, they just seem like good kids. Respectful. They just seem like they're bright when they respond. So that's Parkland, Florida. It's north of Miami. Nicholas Cruz was armed with at least one AR-15 rifle. He had multiple magazines. He was really into guns. I want to talk about his Facebook page or whatever he has, Instagram. I think maybe he has both in a few minutes because that's been taken away so that we can't see it. But some people have captured screenshots. Well, I'll just tell you that it looks as though he was involved with the worst kinds of groups, as you can imagine. Fill in the blanks. It's always a mystery to me. You know, I kind of understand why authorities would take away, remove information about it. But on the other hand, I always feel uncomfortable like they're hiding things too. Because I feel that way still about Las Vegas. So much as we don't know much about Las Vegas. Still. Nothing to see here. And then, of course, they rushed yesterday to say it wasn't terrorism. Well, I'm not saying it is. I'm not indicating in any way. But I did see that some people were reporting that on his page before it was scrubbed, whichever page it was, Islamic texts on there. I'm sure it sounds to me like this kid, I am not claiming that this kid was an Islamist. What I would be saying, based on what I'm knowing right now, what I'm hearing right now, is that he was a very, very disturbed kid who gravitated to all kinds of evil. And that might have just been one kind of evil he was gravitating to. But let me tell you more about the details. After he set off the fire alarm so more kids would come out in the hallway so he could kill more. And then he snuck out with the students trying to get away. I guess he did get away for a little bit. Disguising himself as a student fleeing from the school. 19 years old, that's a mystery. Why was he still in school? Why was he still in school? It wasn't now. They said he's a former student, but I think the report I read, unless it's going to be corrected, was that he was there last year. So he's an older student. Kids are saying that he was extremely troubled. They knew him. Some said if there was going to be something like this, many of us thought it would be Nicholas Cruz because he seemed to be dangerous to us. He seemed troubled and scary. There were accounts of kids that actually knew him and said that Nicholas had shown him his guns but Nicholas had started harassing and threatening one of his friends who was a girl. And that's when he decided he couldn't really be a friend with him anymore. So we're learning more and more things about this. We know that one adult victim was 46-year-old athletic director Chris Hickson and a student named Jamie Gutenberg. Her parents, Fred and Jennifer Gutenberg, said that she died in the shooting while their son Jesse made it home. And then there are more things to say about it, but Todd Pirro gave an update this morning on Fox News, so let's listen to his report.
Overnight, we learned brand new information about the killer as the investigation continues at the scene here behind me of yesterday's carnage and also at a mobile home park that's about 30 minutes away from where we are standing right now. There, a massive police presence was reported overnight, sources saying it is in connection with the shooting. A neighbor in the area said police told him it was some kind of explosive at one of the homes. As for yesterday's nightmare, the pictures from inside the school, terrifying. Students trying to find cover under desks, shaking and crying, not knowing what's about to happen. The gunman mercilessly killing at least 17 innocent victims, setting off fire alarms, and then shooting those fleeing with an AR-15. Reports of him wearing a gas mask and having smoke bombs on him during his carnage, then trying to sneak out in the fleeing crowd before being arrested in a nearby neighborhood.
Good thing the door was locked. This shooter shot through the door, poked in, shot a couple people next to me. I was sitting right behind a cabinet, and the bullet passed my ear, got a girl next to me.
That's the first part of that report. That's Todd Pirro this morning on Fox and Friends. And I want you to hear the second part of it because it's equally interesting. Let's listen.
With each passing hour, a picture of 19-year-old Nicholas Cruz becomes clearer. His adoptive mother died this past November, and he was living with a friend's family. Cruz was expelled from school for disciplinary reasons. One student said it was for fighting with his ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend and that Cruz had been abusive to the girl. On social media, Cruz is seen with pictures of guns and knives, bragging about shooting animals, the Broward County Sheriff calling the post very disturbing. And many people described him as, quote, obsessed with guns. A former neighbor said police were called to his home multiple times, and he was seen shooting at a neighbor's chickens. Words like sketchy, weird, off, strange, troubled, and super stressed out all the time used by multiple students to describe the killer. One student even told local media that, quote, everyone predicted the shooting, with kids even joking before yesterday that one day he would shoot up the school.
He was like shy, like with his lunch bag, but like he wouldn't talk a lot.
What was your take on it?
I mean, he was like that weird kid at school that you see, like walk around school.
Described as a loner?
Yeah, like a loner.
The major question remains, if all these signs were known, Steve Ainslie and Brian, then why couldn't this be stopped?
Well, Todd Pirro at Fox News, because I can answer that question, because there aren't enough laws that you can pass to stop wickedness when a people, when the moral fiber of a people breaks down and their wickedness takes hold of them, there aren't enough laws and there aren't enough policemen, there are not enough FBI agents in the world to restrain the evil in this many people. You can't anticipate this in this many people. Who's going to police the people? And so when we get into sort of taking people off the street because we suspect they might do something, so what if your neighbor doesn't like you and suspects that you kind of reports that you're kind of acting weird and maybe you should be looked at and taken off the streets or lose your guns? You see where this goes? You know, that's why our founding fathers said that religion and morality were the pillars upon which our democracy, our Republican democracy, set. In fact, one of them said it's good for no other kind of people. People that are self-restrained, people that have a sense of who God is, people that are restrained for other purposes besides some civil law, people that self-control. This kind of freedom can work if people fall into that category because of religion and morality. Did I say religion and morality is what I meant to say if I misspoke? Religion and morality. And apart from that, there is no other hope. And I can tell you that founding fathers, not just a few, time after time, I could read you a dozen quotes saying the exact same thing. So we have what? What kind of religion do we have? Religion is man's crafting of some sort of relationship with God. It's not Christianity. It can be in the broad category, but religion still restrains people. There's right and wrong. There are homes with moms and dads who teach their children what's right and wrong, whose brothers and sisters are embarrassed if they misbehave at school, and they bring pressure on them. All of those stopgaps are gone. Well, about gone. They're almost gone. And I'm just telling you, the only the way the culture responds right now, because they are sort of lost. We live in a lost society where people are really clueless about who God is and some other authority. So their solution, of course, is to pass more laws, you know, restrict more guns or pass more rules about mental health, or they're desperate for a solution. But the solution, of course, is harder and deeper. And it really lies in the hearts and minds of all of us. It is a revival of the Almighty God, the Holy One, the maker of heaven and earth, the one who created life and said, you cannot take human life. It is an interjection of Him into our lives personally and then into our country in general that will turn this back. And I honestly don't see any other solution besides that. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, my name is Brant. You ever make a change and then wonder, why didn't I do this a long time ago? That's what's happening for thousands of people with regard to their health care. They're joining MediShare, and then they're wondering, why didn't I already do this? For most members, it costs less than half what they were paying for their old health plan. There's a huge provider network, too. You can customize your plan, and this is awesome. MediShare members can go online with a doctor 24/7. So if you need a prescription for the flu or something, it's so convenient for you and your family. So yeah, this is one of those why did I wait on this things. And if you don't love your current health plan, you're not stuck with it. You can join MediShare anytime. By the way, to give you an idea, the typical savings for a family, about $500 a month. It just makes so much sense. Check it out. They're super easy to talk to. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
8 Days of Hope started after Hurricane Katrina, and we were blown away by the devastation that we saw on the Gulf Coast of Mississippi and down in Orleans. And then this past year, when we went to Houston, 8 Days of Hope, our rapid response team, we stayed for almost 7 weeks. We had never seen hundreds of thousands of families waiting for somebody to come and help them. And now you get a chance to be the hands and feet of Jesus. March 10th to March 24th, 8 Days of Hope is going to do its first ever back-to-back trip. 8 Days of Hope, 14 and 15. It's free. All you have to do is get to Houston. We provide the food and lodging, a couple great looking t-shirts. We're looking for skilled professionals, people who know how to work with their hands. Maybe they do this for a living. We're also looking for people that are less skilled, but are still looking to be a part of something way bigger than just themselves. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com. Come be a part of the largest rebuilding trip ever planned by 8 Days of Hope. Go to 8daysofhope.com for more information, 8daysofhope.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The good book reminds us to make a joyful noise unto the Lord, provided it's not inside a public high school music room. The choir director at Searcy High School in Arkansas was forced to remove posters that included Bible verses related to music. For example, love binds us together in perfect harmony, Colossians chapter 3, verse 14. Well, somebody from the Freedom From Religion Foundation complained, said the messages were unconstitutional. The Freedom From Religion Foundation is a notorious group of Wisconsin atheists who want to remove Christianity from the public marketplace. They typically target and bully small towns and communities, and that's exactly what happened in Searcy. The Freedom From Religion Foundation says they are satisfied, but their attack on the high school choir did not set well with locals, who accused the tone-deaf atheist of striking discord. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Good morning, guys. They've still got a vote to proceed here this morning in the Senate, and there could be as many as four versions of a bill in the queue. But that gang of 22, that's new. Now, here's what's in this plan. Let's get right to it. First, it grants $25 billion for the wall over the next 10 years, but only $2.5 billion up front, and it has congressional oversight, which means it could be pulled at some point. It provides legal status and a path to citizenship for Dreamers, but it prohibits Dreamers from sponsoring their parents for citizenship. Finally, that diversity lottery, that remains in place for $55,000 every year. Now, Republican senators like Lindsey Graham, who's part of this gang, says our proposal would represent the most significant change to immigration law in the past 35 years. And his colleague Jeff Flake says he's pleased to be part of this group of Republicans and Democrats who are working together to make a law rather than appoint. Now, Democrat supporters, a part of this group, like Senator Tim Kaine, says we've reached a deal that gives us the best chance to protect the Dreamers against deportation from the only country they know as home. But guys, here's the deal. It's not likely President Trump will go for this because it fails to meet all four pillars of that deal, especially on that chain migration and visa lottery, as you just saw. And it's not as conservative as the bill being offered in the House. So I'm not sure exactly how far down the road this gets us. By the way, you may want to watch for whether or not about this Gang of 22 bill is the first or the fourth voted on. The sequencing of votes matters because you want your bill to go last, lest all the other three before it should fail.
All right, Jeff Griff Jenkins, this morning on Vox and Friends, Sandy Rios back with you. That's a complicated process. That's confusing to most of us unless you serve in the Senate. But the order, he's right, the order does matter. But here's the thing. Let me just say they're up to no good. They are up to no good. I want to put it to you this way. This is an article by Daniel Horowitz that just came out this morning, or yesterday. Illegal alien DUI kills American toddler in ambulance. This is a story that happened Sunday night. Winston-Salem, North Carolina, an illegal alien from El Salvador who was driving while intoxicated and without a driver's license crashed into an ambulance and killed an American toddler. The driver and passenger of the car initially tried to flee the scene but were apprehended by local police. Is there anyone in Washington who will speak up for the dreams of this three-year-old American, which were shattered by failed open border policies now being championed by both parties? Is there anyone who will even read this story on the House and Senate floors while Dick Durbin reads his sob stories about illegal aliens? Where are North Carolina's two Republican senators, Richard Burr and Tom Tillis? They are too busy promoting the dreams of people like Jose Duran Romero, who would be eligible for their amnesty proposals. The Goodlatte bill is the only one in that category that categorically bars those from DUI convictions from amnesty. Even the Trump framework does not necessarily bar these people from applying for dream amnesty. According to a published outline of the bill, the amnesty follows the same standards laid out by Obama's illegal amnesty. Not only does everyone in Washington support amnesty, they are now using Obama's loose and illegal standards as a legitimate basis from which to craft a law. The American people simply don't matter. And I'm in agreement with Daniel. I am in agreement with him. We'll put this on our Facebook page and let you read it. There's a lot more to the story, but that happened Sunday night. Meanwhile, they are, you know, waxing eloquent about the rights of people brought here illegally, the so-called dreamers. The dreams of Americans and the dreams of the future of their children, all those whose children have been killed by illegal aliens, don't matter. I guess they figure there are more voters than the Dreamers. I don't know. Why would they do this? Why would Republicans do this? But that is exactly what they're doing. In fact, I'm hearing this morning that there's an amendment that Chuck Schumer is going to be offering today. And it offers not only amnesty and border money, just a little bit of border money, you know, not too much, just enough to make the president think there's something there, and future amnesty. There's a handwritten provision on the last two pages of the typed out or the printed bill that actually invite illegal aliens to come in for the next 4 months and then would protect them from removal. Honestly, really, that's how far they're going with this. This is Jeff Flake, the distinguished senator from Arizona, is telling people they already have 65 votes. Some of us don't believe that's quite true, but all they need is 60 to vote for cloture on a bill, and then they vote, then they just need 51 votes. And there are enough Republicans, really wretched Republicans like Jeff Flake and John McCain and Lindsey Graham, who will vote with the Democrats on this, that it will likely pass. Do you see how excited in that report by Griff Jenkins, how excited the Democrats are about this? But now the Democrats at the same time are stopping these votes. So that's the other puzzling part about this. Mitch McConnell is boasting about how he's allowing this process to proceed. You know, he's doing what he promised. What a guy. He keeps his promises on procedure, not so much to his people, to the American people. But boy, he's all over those procedures. Trust me. You know, he's keeping up the filibuster on legislation, you know, because we can't change the esteemed rules of the Senate. No, because the Senate, I believe, and the rules and the money that is brought in, especially like through this last budget deal, those are his gods. And his loyalties are not with this country. And that's the truth about so many of them. I can't even tell you. In fact, I heard something yesterday that I'm going to share with you. This has got my my cork popped, I'll tell you. I heard that Devin Nunes is being pressured by leadership in the House to stop doing what he's doing. Just pull back. Don't, you know what? Don't release that second memo that has to do with the State Department and John Brennan and all the others. Don't release that. It's just a little too, you know, it's just too much. You know, we just had too much kind of pull back now and kind of let us have some rest. You know, that's the way it goes. Now, I don't know if Devin Nunes is going to listen to that, but I can tell you that it looks to me like a leadership, and you fill in the blanks about who that might be, is off the rails, off the rails. And so, and then another little wonderful thing to report to you about what's happening in the Senate. I'll give you, this is the kind of thing that's happening. I've heard repeatedly, I've had people talk to me privately and call me because they know that I have a really good relationship with the Attorney General. We're not buddies. I don't call him, but I've known him for a long time. You've heard me talk about that. And I am a supporter because I know he's on our side on the issues. And I know what a fighter he is, even though he's sort of a quiet gentleman. But I've watched him over the course of time. And I think many that other people that I trust feel that he is doing things inside the Justice Department that we don't know about. Working away, chipping away, and being, you know, very aggressive in some areas and in ways that we cannot see. And that if he is forced to resign, the next appointment will be a nightmare for all of us. The president has a terrible track record on who he appoints. And I could go into that. That would be a whole show today. In fact, I hope to get to that at some point. But this is part of the story. The Justice Department has several people, you know, so I told you it's over 1,000 people working for the Justice Department, I think even in that building. So there are obviously people under deputy attorney generals. We know about the most famous one, Rod Rosenstein. He was confirmed, but the others have not been confirmed. The place is being run by Obama appointees, and that's not General Sessions' fault. Do you want to know whose fault it is? I'll read it to you right here. The Department of Justice has a national security division, the mission of which is to protect the United States from national security threats through legal means, and to coordinate national security efforts of prosecutors, law enforcement agencies, and the broader intelligence community. Among other duties, the head of the seemingly critical division is one of three people at the top of the Justice Department to sign off on applications for FISA warrants before they go to the FISA court. The other two are Attorney General Jeff Sessions and the Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein. Trouble is, John Demers, the man President Trump nominated last September to head Justice's National Security Division, is waiting to be confirmed by the Senate because Cory Gardner, Republican senator from Colorado, has a beef with Attorney General Sessions over enforcement of federal marijuana laws in Colorado. Yes, you read that right. There is no permanent presidential appointee in charge of combating terrorism at the Justice Department because a Republican senator has put discretionary federal marijuana enforcement above U.S. national security in his priorities. And it goes on to talk about the qualifications of Demers and how he came through both committees, and he's been sitting there, and I'm telling you, he's not the only one. I think there are at least three department heads at Justice who have been put on hold by senators. Cornyn had a hold on his name escapes me, but he's Russ Vaught. John Cornyn had a hold on him for months. Russ just got back last week, got through last week because, it seems like senator from Texas got something like $25 million or billion. I'm never sure. Funding more for Texas for disaster relief. They've already gotten millions, and I'm not begrudging anyone needing money for disasters. But I'm telling you that there is graft and corruption here. And so, Cory Gardner is responsible, has been, for holding up several nominees for the Justice Department because, you know what, he doesn't like that icky, you know, thing that General Sessions is doing on marijuana, actually enforcing the law. So this is how this goes. Meanwhile, this is the other story that I have been meaning to talk about all week, and now we're at a point where I can't discuss it as much as I wanted to. But it was the whole business of Rob Porter, the assistant to John Kelly, in the White House, and they've been talking a great deal about his abuse of his two wives. All right, you know that. You've seen this in the news. One wife had a picture of her with a black eye, and they're divorced, and the other one wrote a commentary. I was married to Rob Porter. Here's the truth about abusive relationships. Now, I listen to their testimonies, and I watch them on camera. And it's interesting, you know, this girl who wrote the article for The Washington Post, her name is Colby Holderness. That's one of his ex-wives. She says that Willoughby, that's the other former wife, had to obtain a protective order as she was trying to extricate herself from her marriage. My understanding is that Rob Porter kicked in a door because she wouldn't let him in. That's my understanding of what that story is. I had to take an extended leave from graduate school because I was depressed and unable to complete the work. When I finally left Rob for good, my self-confidence was so destroyed that I was too scared to apply to any jobs other than that of a server at a restaurant. It has taken me years to get my professional life back on track. Look, the thing that it seems to me about these girls that I'm hearing and reading, the picture of her with the one girl with a black eye, Rob Porter says that he took that picture, that it happened in a different way than she describes. Now, I don't know what the truth is on that. My point would be, I just don't think you can trust women now when they say they're being abused. I have a total mistrust. We saw this happen with Justice Moore. I understand there are abusive relationships, but they're on a scale of 1 to 10. There's a lot of variance, is there not? I think, you know, when people are in marriages and love relationships, they get very emotional and volatile. I could see, you know, men, you know, not hitting. I never can think of an excuse for a man to hit a woman, but hitting their fist, knocking in a door, this is what men do when they're mad. So I don't think that in itself is some kind of proof of some horrible abuse. And the things that both girls describe seem so mild to me, honestly, compared to the stories I've heard. I'm sorry. Yeah, I know. I recognize. I know what you're going to say, especially women who have been abused. It's very upsetting, but you must please stop to realize that there are varying levels. There are women who are beaten constantly and bloodied and go to the hospital. That's a very different situation. I actually don't think that's what happened to these girls. One of them didn't report any kind of abuse at all, just that he kicked the door in. I mean, personal physical abuse to herself. So, okay, I say that to say, now this has become the center of things, you see, because this is what's important to press, because this is the way to get your mind off what's happening, what's really happening, which is this incredible abuse of our system, this incredible attempt to break constitutional barriers and cooperate to undermine a sitting president, to undermine the system, more importantly. We could survive the undermining of one president, although I'm not in favor of that either. But it's the constitutional system that they're trying to undermine. I'm going to read this to you. This is from Andy McCarthy. We mentioned yesterday that Susan Rice wrote an email to herself, and it was questionable. But rather than my words, I'm going to read Andy's. On her way out the White House door and out of her job as National Security Advisor, Susan Rice writes an email to self. Except it's not really an email to self. It is quite consciously an email for the record. Her term having ended 15 minutes before, Rice was technically back in private life, where private people have private email accounts, even on notepads. Yet, for at least a few more minutes, Rice still had access to her government email account. She could still generate an official record. That's what she wanted her brief email to be. The dispositive memorialization of a meeting she was worried about. A meeting that had happened over 2 weeks earlier, at which, of course, President Obama insisted that everything be done, quote, by the book, end quote. Funny, though, the by-the-book thing about the contemporaneous memos is that they are, well, contemporaneous, made immediately after an event. This was not contemporaneous. He goes on to say the email was written January 21st to record decisions made on January 5th, not contemporaneous. And then he goes on to flesh out why, and I said this to you yesterday, it looks as though Susan Rice did this for a purpose. She was trying to obfuscate what was really happening because, in fact, Comey and others met in the Oval Office to try to figure out what they were going to do. They'd started this investigation on the Trump administration. What were they going to tell him? Andy McCarthy goes on to say that he does not think that, you know, Comey famously boasted how he briefed President Trump on this dossier. Andy does not think he told President Trump hardly anything about the dossier. And on the article goes. It's called What Did Comey Tell President Trump About the Steele Dossier? We'll put it on our Facebook page. The point is, these are the important issues, not some alleged abuse by an official in the White House.
You shall not murder. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. A Dutch doctor who forcibly euthanized an elderly woman without her consent acted in good faith, according to a euthanasia oversight panel, when it cleared the doctor of any wrongdoing. The woman, over 80 years old, had dementia. The doctor put a sedative in her coffee and then enlisted the help of family members to hold the struggling, objecting woman down so the doctor could administer the lethal injection. The elderly woman fought, but was murdered anyway. A culture that accepts murdering innocent babies for convenience will also accept murdering older people for convenience. They call murder compassion.
Listen to the Hamilton Corner, weekdays from 5 to 6 p.m. Central on AFR. For more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
In the face of tragedy, the world can often seem meaningless and cruel. But this week on Truth for Life, Alistair Begg points us to a greater hope as he continues our study in Romans chapter 8. Join us Monday through Friday on Truth for Life with Alistair Begg.
Truth for Life, weekday mornings at 11:30 Central on AFR and online at afr.net.
Announcing three new episodes of Ryan Defrady's Secret Agent. These animated half-hour episodes will entertain children.
That's right!
And teach lessons about joy, patience, and the dangers of selfishness. Ryan Defrady's is a secret agent with a whole lot to learn, and he insists on working alone. Until he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
Mommy!
Ryan Defrady's Secret Agent, episodes 4, 5, and 6 from American Family Studios are available now at afastore.net.
Nearly one in four pregnancies in America will end in abortion. The Ministry of Preborn provides free ultrasounds for abortion-minded women throughout America. When a mother sees her baby on an ultrasound and hears the baby's heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
They introduced me to my child for the first time through an ultrasound. I was able to see this life growing inside of me, hear the heartbeat, and nothing else mattered at that point. I wasn't afraid anymore. I got to meet my child for the first time, and it changed everything. I was a mother to be.
Your gift of $140 will cover the cost of 5 ultrasounds. All donations are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes to saving babies. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. Or donate securely at preborn.com. Your love can save a life.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Today, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is expected to offer a legislative proposal that would extend an amnesty to millions of illegal aliens. No surprise there. That's been the Democrats' demand for years, since it would translate in short order to additional votes for their party and perhaps a permanent electoral majority. While that prospect should be sufficient grounds for Republicans, if not American patriots more generally, to reject the Schumer gambit, there's another powerful reason for doing so. Without secure borders, such amnesties typically prompt more aliens to come here illegally seeking similar treatment. But that's not just a theoretical possibility in this case. It will certainly happen if the Schumer Amendment were enacted, since it explicitly extends the amnesty to so-called DACA kids who aren't here yet, but arrive by the end of June. Senators, just say no. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I never really knew my mom because she gave me away to some lady when I was one. I stayed with her for 6 years and it was horrible. I got sick with TB, a rickshaw ran over my foot, and there were a lot of bad people around. People were always fighting, swearing, drinking, and smoking in the red light district. A few times, drunk men even came in and abused me and hit me over the head with things. A woman from India Partners brought me here. When I got here, I looked around and saw my friend Najesh, and saw how much better his life is now. That's how I knew I wanted to stay here. Growing up, I never had enough food or any good clothing. Here at the home, I get all the clothes and food I could ask for. And in school, I've learned how to read and write in English, and instead of worshiping idols, I now follow Jesus. I don't know where my mom and dad are, but I have a family here now. And they are encouraging me to share the love of Jesus with everybody I meet.
Sandy Rios back with you. That's the voice of Raul, who is 14 years old. You know, the translator sounded like a 14-year-old. The actual voice sounded like a little boy. You know, it's been my experience in these areas of the world where there's such great poverty that children, their growth is stunted and they're much smaller. Remember that family that was had 16 kids tied up in their home? And that was one of the remarks they made. This is here in the United States. They said that the kids, the boys, their growth was stunted. And this is exactly what I saw, especially when I was in Manchuria. And we spent some time with some little boys who'd swum across the Tumon River. Little boys, they were like 17 and 16, but they looked like they were 12. And that's what Raul makes me think of, because he sounded very, very young for 14. We are partnering with India Partners this week to try to help boys like Raul to get out of the sex trafficking industry in Mumbai, India. It's as simple as that. And we've been asking you all week to help us make this possible. It's not, you know, you can give whatever you can afford. Like if you can only afford to give $7, that will provide help for one child for one day, $7.08. And let me just tell you up front that if you call 1-877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, and have your credit card information ready, they will be there to gladly and gratefully take your donation. Also, you can go to AFR.net, and make a pledge. David Harms is with India Partners, and we've asked him to join us this morning. We talked last year, and we did, you guys, as always, poured your hearts into this campaign. Mm-hmm. We reached our goal, and as I recall, we built, I think it's a boys' safe house or a girls' safe house. Yeah. I'm not sure. David, what did we pay for last year?
Well, the beauty of it is we were able to expand our girls' safe house and basically reinvent the whole thing and expand it, which was great. And then now the boys' home is where our focus is for this year, in the sense of being able to also provide more space for the boys that have been rescued out of the red light district. So we are so grateful. But the other thing, and I have been so anxious to share this with you, Sandy. I was just there two weeks ago, and we kind of did the 2017 recap. You know, what's changed? How's this working? Because of the funding that came in last year, we expanded our staff inside the red light districts. And instead of going in 2 days a week, because that's all we could afford before, now going in and just being there 5 days a week, and that has increased the relationships with the women and the girls, so that in 2017, twice as many women were rescued out of the red light district. Twice as many, simply because the funding was there and our staffing was there, so that we could not only rescue them out, but now in the safe houses, this is where the real healing begins, as they understand Jesus, as they get every need met in a loving, caring environment. So we're very, very thankful for the support that came in last year. It really has made a difference, so we can end human trafficking.
Well, that's cool, David. And it's good for people to hear, you know, good news. Trust me, I give them a bucket load of bad news every morning almost, because we're talking about politics and news. And it's just a wonderful thing to see us being able to do something somewhere that's good and tangible. And let me just interject right away that it's 877-616-2396. If you'd like to give to this year's effort, 877-616-2396, or go online at AFR.net. That's AFR.net. David, I'm curious. When you say they go in, now these are to the brothels. You're talking about into mm-hmm. the brothels, right?
Yeah.
Who's going in? And what the heck are they doing? Because, you know, we've seen movies and we know that the so-called Johns don't like to have interference with their workers.
Right.
So how did they do that?
Well, we basically literally set up in an area. It's like having a storefront right smack in the middle of the area, the red light district. We rent or purchase an actual space. And that's kind of our hub of operations. We will do things that the owners aren't going to be concerned about. We'll do things like train cooking and jewelry making and these kinds of sewing and tailoring just to try to teach a skill. And that's a good thing. And they don't see that as bad. But what they don't also understand is that as we're now there 5 days a week, the conversations and the relationships, it's kind of a subtle and a bit covert way to be able to say to these women, you can come out. You don't owe them anything. You do not really have a debt, even though they force that on you. And so as those relationships and discussions happen, we are literally light in the middle of incredible darkness because it's smack in the middle of these red light districts. One area I went to, there are estimated to be about 500 what are called commercial sex workers. These are women trafficked in and now held against their will, really, in these areas. 500 of them in one area, and they're all over. There's estimated to be 200,000 of these trafficked young girls under 18, 200,000 in Mumbai alone. That's how prevalent this is. And so to be able to have these relationships and to pull women out, that's what we're doing. And we can only do that because we have a place for them to go, which is the safe houses that are the funding that's coming in through your gift today.
Wow, those are dramatic stories. And now the kids, younger kids, these girls I'm not going to ask that question. This is a family show. Let me just say, the girls have children, and are they the ones that you're helping to get out? Are there children trafficked in the broad population who are brought back to these brothels?
All of it. When a child is born in the red light district, they are considered the property of the owner. At least the owner feels that way, right? And if we don't get the children that are conceived and born in the red light district, if we don't get them out, 94% of them will go right into that work themselves. It's just because they're considered property and they have no understanding of life outside of that work.
Do you find that the moms really want their children? Moms love their kids.
Yeah,
do the mothers really want them to go into these safe houses and get them out?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, what mom wouldn't? Because they know what they experience. And they're like, we don't want this for our daughter. They feel like they're stuck, but they can at least give their kids a chance. And so that's why they will do that. And then as we get them out as well, typically the children are the ones that go out first. We can rescue them because the moms will say, yes, please take them. And then they sometimes themselves, once the owner sees that the child is gone, the mom gets abused all the more. Mm. But it's worth it to them for their child to be safe. And then as they realize their child is safe, now they think, okay, these partners, these India partners staff, they're getting my kid safe. Maybe they can get me safe too. And that's where those relationships come in. Wow. I do want to also quickly, if I may, because I know we're going to run out of time. I just got word. We have a $2,000 doubling match that just got dropped in here. So if you call now and make your gift, it'll go twice as far, up to $2,000. An exciting piece of news. So if you can give right now, it's going to go twice as far to rescue more girls.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so generous of someone listening. It's just so generous. So the idea is that they want to encourage you to pick up the phone and call and make your pledge. And for every dollar you give up into $2,000, they will give a dollar. So that makes it $4,000, just to make it really plain. And all you have to do is call 877-616-2396. That's 877-616-2396. Or you can give online at afr.net. afr.net. David, there are so many dialects in India. I think there's like 200 plus languages, really. Yeah. So is there one language spoken by the women in this area? Do you deal with multiple languages?
Well, there's always multiple languages. Hindi is the primary language of Mumbai in this area. You've got Tamil in the southeast side. You've got Bengali in the north side. If you saw the movie Lions or Lion, that was a confusion because he only went about 200 miles from where he started and he didn't know the language. That's very common.
Yeah.
But when they get into Mumbai, obviously they're going to learn the primary language. And as they do that, obviously the owners they want them to learn the language so that they can communicate with the customer, shall we say. And that's kind of the way it is in the red light district.
All right. So then given that, how then do you communicate to these young women and children about who Jesus is, who they've never, ever heard of in their entire lives, for the most part. I doubt there's hardly any exception to that. How do you communicate that there is a Savior,
right,
and that
right.
he still lives? I mean, that's very complex stuff. How do you do that?
It is. Well, the Hindu language believes in many gods. So to be able to talk about Jesus, they might have heard about Jesus, but he's just one of the many, right? The problem comes when we start talking about the exclusivity of Jesus. And that's hard to understand. And the other thing that's hard for them to understand is grace. They don't understand grace. Everything is contingent, right? Just the unilateral love is so hard to understand because, quote, love always comes with contingencies, which is basically their services, right? And so grace is hard to communicate to somebody who's never experienced it. And in some cases, I've been in places where the translation works. They don't even have a word for grace. So the concept of grace and God's grace to us and forgiveness for what they've done, very hard to communicate because it doesn't have to be earned. Right?
Yeah. You know, David, I ran into that. I was in Japan a number of years ago for 3 weeks doing concerts, and I would try to do what you're trying to do only to Japanese audience. And the thing that I stumbled upon was the whole notion of shame, because they don't have that concept either, was the God removing your shame. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way I knew how to make this make sense to them. So this is having an effect. India Partners, one of the things I say about you every day when we do this is that it's not enough to bring kids out of poverty, even out of sexual trafficking. It's not enough to bind up their wounds, to heal their bodies. Nothing will be gained if we don't help them discover that they can be transformed from the inside, that they have worth before an almighty God, and there's nothing he cannot forgive. There is a life they can live that is so much richer, fuller than they can even imagine. And that's what India Partners does. And let me just say that the phone number is 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or go to afr.net, and make your most generous pledge. David, this year's offering, when people give their gifts, what will it do?
Well, we are obviously continuing the work in the safe houses with the girls and the women. That is the ongoing work of what we do, and it's done things like increase our staff inside the red light district, but also your gift is going to help complete the purchase, expansion, and the ongoing work of a new boys' home where the boys go and can be safe. So all of that works together. And yes, there are boys that are trafficked. So not only are we now talking about young girls, we have young boys that have been trafficked, rescuing them out as well as part of what your money does. And we're going to try to complete that part of this project as well. And with the doubling opportunity for about three more minutes, I hope I don't sound pushy, but I am going to sound urgent. We got like 3 minutes for
$2,000. You can
do that. Go ahead. 877-616-2396. And by the way, Sandy, I'm just going to put it out there. Because it's $7.08 to provide a day of safety, rescue, and care, maybe you can take care of one child for an entire year for $2,560.
Yeah.
Just think about that. One child safe for a year because you could give that amount of money.
Well, that's and somebody listening could do that, David. So, listen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. God bless and keep you guys and prosper you in your work. And for those of you listening, it's 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or you can give online at afr.net, India Partners. David Harms, thank you so much for joining me today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, and thanks for calling.
All right, my pleasure. All right, tomorrow you'll want to tune in because Howard Kurtz from Fox News will be my guest. I think you're going to enjoy it. Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.